Have you been to your local food co-op lately? If not, tell me what you picture. Rows upon rows of kombucha options? Bags of overpriced oats? Refrigerators full of pre-made meals that you'd actually enjoy quite often, in theory, but maybe in a different life with a different income?
Me traveling around, going to different co-ops in the Midwest, I've been told that there is a stigma that comes along with co-ops that is kind of like hoity-toity, a little on the higher end, which is true.
Akil Talley is general manager for the brand new Detroit People's Food Co-op. He says that the team at this new venture is well aware of the stereotype, but he's working on making sure that the new store can offer something to all residents of Detroit's North End.
Our co-op is a little more modern. We will be a 50-50 split of organic, all-natural, and conventional products. So you'll see a lot of stuff that you will see at a traditional grocery store, but you'll also, in our grocery store, have access to a lot of local products that you won't see in any other store.
After 14 years of organizing, gathering support, and building, the Detroit People's Food Co-op will open its doors on May 1st. It's a two-story brick building on Woodward, very hard to miss, with a bright orange and chartreuse green roof. We paid the store a visit last week as 29 staffers plus volunteers and contractors made final preparations. This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. General Manager Akil Talley says that the project began over a decade ago with Malik Yakini and the Detroit Black Community Food Sovereignty Network.
And they came up with the idea based upon a previous co-op that was located in this area, the Cass Corridor Co-op. And once it closed, if I remember the story correctly, Baba Malik and the DBCFSN staff wanted something to replace it. So they started a food buying club. They would get together and buy food in bulk and then divvy it up amongst everybody in the club. Do-it-yourself co-op for sure. And then along the lines, they just got the idea that they wanted an actual store.
There was a time when grocery stores in Detroit neighborhoods were not as hard to find, but obviously we live in a different era now. And looking out the window, there's a Family Dollar down the block. It seems like those are the kinds of places that have been popping up instead of actual stores with fresh produce, with healthy foods. This Woodward's come a long way, but would you say there's still a need for fresh, healthy food choices?
Definitely. It seems that a lot of the grocery stores that offer those healthier options are concentrated more so in the midtown to downtown area of the city. So we probably need to expand more into the actual neighborhoods. Like, we're in the North End right now. We could use a co-op on the far west side of the city, the far east side of the city, the southwest side of the city.
Do you mind telling us a little bit about your journey into this work and how food and food sovereignty and food access became something you wanted to throw yourself into?
Yeah, so ironically, I got into the retail business because I had been laid off. I was working at the airport and they were doing layoffs and I needed a job. And at the time, my little sister's boyfriend worked at a Whole Foods market in West Bloomfield. So I applied, I got the job. They put me in the prepared foods department. That's where I met my mentor, Jeremy Abbey. He was the person who taught me how to hold a knife and just started my love and my passion for food there. Worked in management, but what really brought it all home for me, I'm a Detroit resident, and Whole Foods opened the Detroit store in 2013. I came aboard there and I just noticed that we were literally in a food desert. So that kind of kickstarted my passion for wanting to bring the healthiest options to this community.
How did you meet Malik and the group?
During my interview process. one of my very close friends was a part of a lot of the food sovereignty push throughout the city, and he knew Malik. So when this position became open, he suggested to Malik and the board that they interview me, and it just went from there.
You know, Malik has talked to us a couple times over the course of the project, you know, when it was earlier iterations. Can you share a little bit of what you've, some of the work that's been done since you came on to get this place open?
Man, yeah, when I got here, the store was just a shell. It was a few shelves in place. A lot of the fixtures you see weren't here. But when I started the end of January, it was just a building. It was just a shell. So everything that you see now, the fixtures, like I said, the product, is all brand new.
It's a nice polished concrete floor, beautiful bright paint job in here. I mean, it kind of looks like a lot of other high-end grocery stores people might have seen.
It's very intentionally built all the way down to the color schemes. I know Baba Malik, when he and I were discussing the makeup of the store, he mentioned like he wanted the bright orange colors, the colors that you don't traditionally see in grocery stores. He wanted that to stand out. In the building itself, the color scheme is very unique.
Akil, for those who haven't had the pleasure, how do co-ops work?
So, co-ops are community owned. And typically, co-ops reach out to lenders to get funding to actually build the co-op. But the ownership piece is where the community comes in. For our co-op, there is a lifetime, one-time only fee of $200 to become a member owner. And what that affords you is the ability to have a say in what products we offer, what services we offer. Your voice is heard. It's kind of like having shares in a company.
Do you have to live in Detroit to be a member?
You have to live in Michigan, but not necessarily within the city limits.
Detroit's history, modern history with grocers, has been kind of complicated. There obviously aren't as many grocery stores as a city this size needs. Can you say anything about how the group's been thinking and talking about, you know, where this fits in? I mean, can this be replicated in other places? I mean, it must have been a huge project to get it off the ground.
Yes, we, again, in coming into this and coming out of the corporate world and into the co-op world, one thing that I've become keenly aware of is the intentions behind all of the decisions. We have meetings with our board members on a monthly basis where we intentionally devise plans on how we're going to affect the community or how we can make a bigger footprint within the community or what it will look like 4 or 5 years down the line to open a co-op in another part of the city. So we have been very intentional in terms of how we've been approaching the co-op and its impact to the city.
I understand there's a kitchen upstairs.
There is a massive kitchen upstairs. There's 4 kitchens. State-of-the-art equipment. It's amazing. It's beautiful. Breathtaking kitchen.
Is that just for food prep here, or can you say more about what it's used for?
It's multifaceted. So the kitchens on the second floor are governed by the DBC FSN and led by Chef Gabriel McNeil. They are used for anything from cooking classes to a rental space for anyone with a small business that wants to come in, prepare their foods in a commercial kitchen that is FDA approved. They can package their food here. They can store their food here. We have space for dry and cold storage. It can operate as an incubator kitchen. We do catering. There is a banquet hall that fits 250 upstairs. So, yeah, the potential is limitless.
Retailers of many kinds have been running into staffing issues over the past couple of years. I mean, it's just hard. Have you found that it's been difficult to staff up, given that this is a little bit different kind of organization with some serious mission?
You hit the nail on the head. Typically, yes, it's difficult for staffing, but there was so much excitement for this co-op to open. We actually did a hiring fair where we got hundreds of people to come out. And to start, we wanted to start with a smaller group and expand based upon how the business expands. And our team is 29 team members. We turned away over 1,300 people. And within that 1,300, again, dozens and dozens of qualified people. So we were in a unique position where we didn't have an issue finding good qualified team members.
Final preparation is going on during draft weekend in Detroit. I mean, I feel like the ground is practically vibrating on this end of Woodward right now.
Yeah, it is both amazing to see and also a little difficult to navigate. But, you know, take your lemons where they come and make lemonade. But it is definitely amazing to be in this area as well, just miles away from where the draft is stationed and seeing the buzz. And it's also causing more buzz for our store because people are from out of town coming over, seeing the building, and they have tons of questions.
Akhil Talley is the general manager of the Detroit People's Food Co-op. Akhil, thank you for talking with us, and congratulations on opening day. I know it's just going to be very happening over here.
Thank you so much, and I appreciate you guys coming out to see our beautiful store May 1st and May 18th.
We need to take a break. When we come back, we'll meet Malik Yakini, a Detroit organizer, advocate, and mentor who's been a part of the co-op team since day one. Stick around.
Support for Michigan Public's Stateside podcast comes from Lake Trust Credit Union, working to empower financial well-being for Michigan consumers, businesses, and communities. Committed to financial solutions and advice to support people and families. More information at laketrust.org.
Support for the Stateside podcast comes from Kalamazoo College, offering a personalized education that combines critical thinking, curiosity, and creativity. Committed to preparing students for meaningful careers that make a positive impact on the world. More at kzoo.edu.
This moment is a big one for everyone who became a member of the co-op, and of course, for everyone who remembers this co-op's progenitor. Malik Yakini has worked for years on food access issues for Black Detroiters. He's a musician, an activist, a food justice organizer, and a personal mentor to so many who've worked on and around the co-op. I asked him about the years that it took to get this far on the current co-op project.
So it's been 14 years of consistent work. We started working on this day-to-day in 2010, but even before that, the idea first emerged in 2006, then we created a buying club in 2009. It was to be the precursor for this. So we've been working on it for a long time. So before we began construction in April of 2020, there were several trees in what is now the parking lot. And so our former project manager, Julie McBride, who actually passed in January of 2020, had this idea that we should cut the trees down and incorporate some of the wood into the store as a way of kind of paying tribute to the earth, our sacred connection to the earth, but also having a reverence for this place. And so we had these trees cut, milled. We found a local resident, a Black woman who lives in this neighborhood, who's a woodworker, and she took those planks that we had milled and dried and made them into these beautiful tables. And also in the deli section, the counter, you should go look at that, is made from these same planks. And then the kind of facing wood on the counter for the deli is made from that. And so we're really pleased to be able to incorporate this into the store.
They're stunning. I couldn't help but notice on the signs in the aisles that they're African characters on each one. Can you say a little bit more about what they are?
Sure. So there's a series of symbols that are most frequently used currently in Ghana. And the reason I phrase it like that is because, of course, all the political boundaries, all the political borders in Africa, and for that, most of the world, for that matter, are a result of colonization. And so what we now call the border between Ghana and Ivory Coast, or Côte d'Ivoire, is really a political border. And so you have the same ethnic group that lives on either side. So initially, a Nkre symbol is developed in what we now call Côte d'Ivoire. But they are most popular now in its next-door neighbor, Ghana. And so Adinkra symbols, they're named after a king. King Adinkra is said to be the one who originated. This is an Adinkra symbol that I wear on my neck every day. This particular one is called Nsorama. This is the name of the school that I used to run. And this symbol is a star. Each of these symbols has a proverb that goes along with it. So the proverb that goes along with this is, I shine not by my own light, but my light is a reflection of the Creator's. And so if you know what these symbols mean, it's kind of almost like a language. They're most often printed on cloth, and again, if you know what the symbols mean, you can read the cloth. And so each one of those symbols on the aisles has a particular meaning. One of the store employees sent me a list of what each one means, but they all, you know, we wanted to both tie the store into an African and African-American aesthetic, but also the meaning behind each one of those is significant too. So it's helping to kind of value set what we're doing here.
What was the old co-op like?
The old co-op? You're referring to the Cass Corridor Food Co-op? Yeah, so I was a member owner there. And also I want to point out that we have Karen Brown on our board of directors, who is one of the former general managers at the Cass Corridor Food Co-op. So we asked her to join so that we could intentionally create some continuity between that co-op and this one. But the Cass Corridor Food Co-op was a storefront co-op, and it's what I jokingly call a crunchy granola co-op. There's many co-ops that developed in the late 60s or early to mid 70s, many of which were created by people that we would call hippies and folks who were kind of living an alternative lifestyle, wanted more natural foods. And so typically those co-ops were small. You could go in, they had barrels of brown rice and tofu, and sometimes they were the only place in town you could get those. But clearly the landscape has changed, the food environment has changed, and so you can go in almost any supermarket now and buy brown rice and buy tofu, and most stores have a health food section now. So we're in a different competitive environment, and so we had to adjust to that. So a storefront co-op like Cass Corridor Food Co-op would be very difficult to make financially cash flow positively in this time period. So we had to go for a bigger store that was more competitive given the market now.
Back in the day when my dad used to take me along to co-op visits on the weekends on his volunteer shifts, there were the barrels of brown rice and everything, and also like a tub of yogurt the size of this table. Those were the buying options. Were there ways that the team had to think about what people wanted, sort of from the other direction too, that it could be the kind of wraparound grocery experience?
Yes. So I'll say I personally am vegan. I eat organically and all that. I'm very concerned about that. But I also realize I live in a city where about a third of the population lives at or below the poverty level, the federal poverty level. And so typically organic and natural foods cost more. And so that's another dilemma we are faced with in this project, that while we want to provide healthier options, those options cost more, and we have to deal with the reality, the economic realities of the community that we're in. And so initially, we were going to have about an 80-20 split between 80% natural and organic items and 20% conventional. We're now at 50-50. And so we want to make sure that when people from the neighborhood come in to get a can of soup, they can get that. And at the same time, if somebody wants to come in and buy organic quinoa from Bolivia, you know, maybe we'll have that too. But so we have this kind of blend to try to make sure that we're addressing the economic realities of the community that we're in.
Anybody who's ever worked in movement knows that community projects take a lot of love and they take a lot of cooperation, and they're not always the smoothest path. It's not just like one entrepreneur getting investors and hanging a shingle up in front of the door. Were there ever moments when you weren't sure if all this was going to come together?
No. There were moments when other people thought that, and there were some very low moments, believe me, but I'm rooted in a sense of spirituality, and so the way I function is, like some of my friends, I claim the victory, so I see it before it happens and just, you know, move towards that manifestation. So I always knew it was going to happen, even when there were all kind of doubters and naysayers. For me, there was no option.
It's very easy to look at Detroit today and say, well, there's a Whole Foods down the way, and there's, you know, for those who need it, there are Family Dollars all over the place now, and maybe say that sovereignty is not the issue that it was 20 years ago. How do you view it?
I don't think black people in this city or people in general are any more food sovereign now than we were 20 years ago. In fact, we might be less food sovereign because of the dominance of the grocery market by Walmart and by a few players. What we've seen in the grocery market, in fact, is consolidation. We see sometimes the bigger firms buying up the smaller firms. So actually, throughout across the country, we have less grocery options than we had 20 years ago. The same is true in specific areas of grocery. For example, chicken. Almost all chicken in this country is coming from about five companies. And so we are certainly no more sovereign than we were 20 years ago. And so part of what we're working on is really not just addressing access, but addressing the questions of who shapes the food system, who owns it, who benefits from it. And really we're trying to make a shift in power from the corporate side of things, controlling things, to actually having a food system that is shaped by, controlled by, and serves people.
Has the co-op started signing people up for memberships yet?
Oh, we started that in 2014. So we have more than 2,600 member owners now. We're 10 years into signing people up. Of course, it was slow early, and, you know, it's been a journey because we were trying to convince people to sign up and be an owner of something that didn't exist. And so there had to be a lot of trust and faith that this actually was going to go from the idea stage to actually manifesting like this. You know, many people were doubters, and so it was hard at first getting people to join. But I can tell you that things accelerated after we started construction, and you know, all the chatter from the naysayers was shut down. And so, and there's many people now, as they see we're getting closer to opening day, there's many people who are rushing to now become member owners.
Malik Yakini is part of the co-founding team for the Detroit People's Food Co-op, opening on the 1st and the 18th. Baba Malik, thank you so much for all your work.
I love the way you said that, part of the team. Thank you so much, because I was just talking to someone else saying, I do not want to be centered. This is not about some individual. The strength of this is that it is a team and it's a collective effort. So thank you for framing it like that.
The Detroit People's Food Co-op begins welcoming its members May 1st. With a grand opening celebration coming up May 18th. And that's the Stateside Podcast for today. I'm April Baer. You can find full Stateside episodes at michiganpublic.org. Today's podcast was produced by Ronia Cabansag. Other producers on the show are Mike Blank, April Van Buren, and our director, Mercedes Mejia. Our intern is Olivia Meradian. Our podcast editor is Rachel Ishikawa. Our executive producer is Laura Weber-Davis. Music for the pod comes from Blue Dot Sessions and from Audio Network. Thank you so much for listening, and we will see you next time. Till then, take care.
Hi, I'm Rebecca Williams.
I'm Lester Graham. We've been working on a big project about Great Lakes birds called the Bird Connection.
It will look at ducks and trumpeter swans,
egrets and herons,
and piping plovers. Yes!
We'll discuss what we've discovered at a Michigan Public Issues and Ale event,
including how some problems for birds are problems for people.
It's at Arbor Brewing Company in Ypsilanti, the evening of May 21st at 7.
You can register at michiganpublic.org.